I'm a Dan, so I don't mind either way. But I know some folks prefer the long version.
Yep, that would be me.
How are you? Everything okay?
Yeah, everything's good.
Seems like the examiner thing's going pretty well for you.
Yeah, more or less. I'm a little perturbed at him right now, but
that's... I try to forward on most of your stuff, you know, when I read it, so it's pretty good stuff. There's a couple good pieces by Giordano, too, Hassan. He wrote a piece that got a tremendous amount of attention. It's one of his best read pieces he's ever put on there.
Yeah, I'm tending to find my pieces on you are well read, regardless of where I write them for. So.
Well, kind of a passionate following of people. They'll pretty much report on anything with my name in it, you know, so that's what happens. And I try to get out there and report most of it on myself and let them know, and I think that kind of is a bit. Sorry, I'm just trying to do a few things. Multitasking here, so forgive the noise. I'm kind of put together my daughter's crib this morning. 2 hours of free time that they put in a schedule that's never actually free, so.
That's never actually 2 hours either.
Yeah, so I'm heading up to Frostburg today.
Yeah, I noticed that one on your Facebook page, and you're going to talk about energy up there, I take it.
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of natural gas. And of course, down in Western Maryland, they only have $50 billion worth by some estimates, so I think it's, I got to get out there anyway. It's been about a month since I've been out there, so, running a statewide campaign, we got to make sure people know you care. I think in the past, sometimes we've neglected certain areas under the assumption that people are just going to show up.
Right, and that's something that I've noticed in the ebb and flow of I've been through a few election cycles since I moved down here, and the ebb and flow of it usually turns out for a Republican candidate, they come down here around late September, early October, and then they don't come back.
Yeah, which is a shame, and I think the Dems do the same. It's not just us. I've spoken, I spent a lot of time in Prince George's County, and a lot of Prince George's County residents have told me that April 4th, day after the primary, you can essentially monopolize the whole area. We'll never see a Democrat here again. And they've been right, because I've been down there quite a bit and have failed to see a Democrat there. So whatever.
Yeah, you could say that about Baltimore City, too, I'm sure.
Yeah, we spend a lot of time there. We do a lot of Orioles games, Lexington Park. We're around there quite a bit. So we're not forfeiting any votes. I don't care. I guess I gave a speech recently at a fundraiser, and I said, Republicans and Democrats, it's not just one, have told me, you're wasting your time. And I said, well, you know what? If that's an ignorant approach to try and get those votes, then I don't want your education. I'd rather stay there and, believe that we can actually make a dent and get our ideas out.
Well, that's something that's interesting to discuss. You're a first-time candidate, so you've never done this before, so obviously you have some people you've hired that are consultants, but you're trying some ideas that are new because, frankly, you've never done this before, so you don't know what to expect.
Right, haven't been a graduate student in psychology for a long time. I've done a lot of reading, or not necessarily scientific, but just kind of, but still academic nonetheless, on, outside of the box thinking. And I remember two specific stories I'd read about just this thing we're talking about. There was one, I never remember the name of these books, but the first one was about a marathon race. It's like a super marathon, some 100-mile race, and it's run over a period of days. And they had this guy, and he had never run in the race before, and had come from, a country where they didn't have access to the communications equipment and, internet and like we do here. He didn't know much about the race. So he ran this race, and he wound up winning with a record time that had pretty much annihilated the prior record. And when they asked him what his secret was, apparently what had happened is everybody who ran the race, they would run and, run until a certain hour of the night. They'd go to sleep and wake up in the morning and run again. And this guy just ran straight through. Like, he ran, he for an hour, sat down, ran through the night, and he just didn't know you were supposed to, and I use that term loosely, stop and sleep. So I think of that story, and then there's another story, this one's a little macabre, but the Mann Gulch story. There was a fire in Mann Gulch, it was a massive fire, and we lost a lot of firemen there, a lot of these smoke jumpers. And the one guy survived, and the guy who survived, they asked him why, and he said, well, I just outran the fire. And I think it was seven or eight others didn't. And he said, well, why did they not survive? Because they wouldn't drop their equipment. Now, the key here was this guy had not gone into the formal training yet. He had just a basic course. And in the training, they tell you never, ever drop your equipment. So all of the firemen, unfortunately, died. They burned to death. And this guy who hadn't had that indoctrinated training, don't drop the equipment, just dumped his stuff and ran, and outran the fire. And I think that's what we need right now in Maryland. We need, I call it like an almost blissful ignorance that we can and will win. You know, not an uneducated ignorance. There's a difference. We've done a lot of homework on this race. We know exactly the vote differentials in each county. We know how big we have to win in Anne Arundel, Hartford, the other counties. We have all those numbers down. That there's a difference. But there's a sense of we're not going to be talked into the we can't do it model. And we like that. No one on the campaign thinks like that. Anyone who does, matter of fact, I get rid of promptly because I'm really just not interested in hearing why we're going to lose, you know?
Well, everybody that runs for office is in it to win it. So that's a given. But I think the idea, and you kind of expressed that with your firefighter analogy, is it's common sense. And sometimes common sense doesn't necessarily find its way into politics.
No, it doesn't. It's unfortunate. I don't really think, you know, everybody is in it to win, though, even on both sides. Like, I don't get it to win. I get what you're saying. I'm not trying to be an antagonist, but not to single out Cardin particularly. I mean, that's an obvious one. I had a vested interest in doing it, but I don't think he's really in it to win. I think he just assumes he already has. And I think there's a difference. Like, I don't see him doing anything. I have been all over this state for a year now, a year and 3 weeks I've been campaigning. I have seen him one time. That's it, Chestertown. I want to be sure. One time we met each other in Chestertown. I find that incredible for a guy who is really fired up and wants to take this seat. And really says to himself, I want to win. That's what that means to me. You would think he'd be out there, you know, shaking hands, pressing the flesh, getting his ideas out there, defending this bold agenda he has for change in a time of crisis. He's not doing any of that. I mean, where are his big policy speeches, his big ideas? I have come out with hard ideas, tangible ideas you can touch and look up on not every issue. Out, but the big important is Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, capital gains taxes, corporate taxes, income taxes, school choice. I mean, these are the big kitchen table issues. We have hard ideas. What are his? I mean, what is he talking about? He's had one bill passed of consequence, and I use that term very loosely, in his entire time in the Senate. It's about stormwater runoff. You know, that's it. He had some pension reform, which was decent with Portman when he was a congressman. But, I mean, this is it. In 45 years, this is the best this guy can do. I don't know if that's really playing to win. That's just kind of playing to stay alive.
Well, I notice he does a lot of appearances before in Democratic Party events. But as far as going out and mixing with the public, yeah, I understand. He's a senator. He does have to do a little bit of work in Washington now and then. But I'm sure he does come to Salisbury more than once or twice a year, but I've never seen him really come around here unless he's here to do something to some government grant that came through and he wants to take credit for it.
I think he has completely forfeited the Eastern Shore. He has seen the expected electoral map, not the electoral map, what he expects, which we firmly disagreement. And he said to himself, don't need it. Don't need the Eastern Shore. You know, don't need Western Maryland. Don't need Anne Arundel. Don't need
That's probably true. But then, you know, it's kind of the same mentality where the unions in Wisconsin just figured, okay, all our people will show up and we'll get rid of Scott Walker. Well, it didn't work that way. Because Scott Walker organized.
Yeah, voted for Walker, right? Was it 37%?
It was in the high 30s. It was mostly the private sector unions that said, look, we understand that our brothers in the public sector unions had to take a little bit of hit for the cause, but we're hurting too. We're not sitting on both sides of the negotiating table like the public sector unions are.
Right, there's a big difference, and that's what I think people fail to understand. One, we're talking about, it's not such thing as public money, but you get my point, taxpayer money.
Right.
Flowing to taxpayer-sponsored jobs, flowing back to, taxpayer-funded politicians. We pay their salaries on one particular side. There's an enormous divide there between, I guess, what we would call private money, which, again, is nonsense, flowing into private companies. I mean, there's a choice component to that in the private market. You get to, if you don't like, well, and I have no problem with this. I never have one. I only have a problem with anti-choice initiatives. Private money, if you don't like the fact that GM happens to be unionized, then just don't buy their stock and don't buy their cars. I love their cars. I've owned two Tahoes. That's, my choice. I like it. It doesn't bother me enough not to do it. But that's not the case with public unions. Public unions, for job and work conditions, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. But for salaries, I have a big problem with that. I said that because, I was a police officer and a Secret Service agent. And when I was, I experienced both sides. And oddly enough, I was in a union. It wasn't a formal union, but for all intents and purposes, it was a de facto union. When I was a police officer, it was called the PBA, the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association. Because of the Taylor laws, they couldn't call it a union. It was a union, trust me,
right,
for all intents and purposes. But in the Secret Service, we had no union at all. There was nothing. Meanwhile, the Secret Service, oddly enough, you were better paid, you had better benefits, and you had better working conditions. So I've seen both sides. So you can't reasonably tell me I don't understand what it's like. And now the union, it was voluntary with the NYPD, the PBA. And it was a good union. I joined it. They had good dental benefits, good vision benefits. But I think they had to compete like everyone else in the world does to show that, it was kind of a meritocracy. There's a reason to belong to this. Here's why. And I thought they did a pretty good job. So that's the only problem I have with public sector unions is you're competing for taxpayer money when taxpayers don't have the money. There's a difference. We don't. I just can't. I have that jobs, not taxes sign I hold up at my sign waving. And once in a while, very rarely, shockingly enough, considering people think Maryland is this overwhelmingly blue state, which I always dispute, but people drop by. Once in a while, I'll get a guy who will say, or a woman, she'll say, taxes and jobs or something like that. And I'll say, listen, you can pay more. It's voluntary. I'm not stopping you. If you think your taxes create jobs and are going to make you wealthier, pay more. I say, fact is, I don't have any more money. I'm sorry. I can't afford it. I can't put braces on my daughter's teeth right now. I can't afford any more taxes. I am really sorry about that.
Right, and the problem is taxes are something you have to pay because if you don't pay them, well, Uncle Sam's going to come after you. And at least for income taxes. Now, you can't really separate out sales taxes and all the other taxes you pay. That's just part of the price. There are legitimate functions of government that need tax money to survive. But the problem is, it seems like we just arbitrarily raise taxes, and instead of addressing the state's deficit, they spend it on more stuff. That's what they did in 2007. That's probably what they're going to do this year.
Which is odd, because every single business, home, family, any kind of organized unit, church, outside of government, is forced to do two things, budget and prioritize. Probably the same thing, a little bit bleed over there. You have to budget your expenses and then prioritize your expenses. Government never does that. They don't. They talk about the same things every time. You hear it from Mark O'Malley, the president, over and over. Police, fire, teachers, roads and bridges. How many times have you heard that? So I don't understand, with a $2.2 trillion tax revenue base, that's not, you know, a budget's 3.7 or more,
right,
they're going up every year, but with a over $2 trillion tax base and a $35 billion state tax base, I don't understand where the priorities are. Like, if you looked at it, well, if that's so important, which it is, we agree, Republicans don't mind paying taxes at all, I agree with your assertion, to fund our military, police, fire, teachers, our court system, no one's saying we don't want to need to pay taxes. Where are the priorities? That's not it. That is not the priority, because the fact is, with that money, we could happily fund those, but that's not what we're doing. We're spending money on cowboy poetry festivals in Nevada. They say, oh, well, that money is insignificant. It was only a couple million dollars. Okay, a couple million dollars would have paid TRICARE benefits for, 100, 200, 300 soldiers. So it's absurd. Like, they just don't get it. They think the American people are stupid. As if, police and fire like that. During a couple of speeches I gave, I had argued the point that, are you telling me the government as a whole is at a level of efficiency, spending-wise, spending your tax dollars, sorry, I'm just moving this quickly, that they're at such a level of efficiency, spending-wise, on the margin, that the very next dollar we cut in budget is going to be like the last clip from a soldier's gun to win a war? In other words, there's no other efficiency to be found anywhere in HHS, anywhere else, which has the largest component of the budget, that the next dollar we cut in spending has to come from, at the state level, a policeman's salary, or, to rehab one of our courts that's falling apart, or a school. Like, there's no other dollar to be cut from the DMV or anything else. I mean, do they really think that the American people are that stupid? And there's no cuts to be had that you have to... Now, keep in mind, a cut does have to be made, Michael.
Right.
But the cut has to be made from your budget now to give them that extra dollar to fund the dollar in cuts they couldn't fund. Because they're trying to make the argument to you that, oh, no, there's no more cuts to be found. You have to fund it. You cut. It's just an absurd argument. If the government was efficient in spending your tax dollars, really efficient, kind of like, businesses that are forced, productivity is forced upon them to be competitive, I don't think people would mind the tax increase. I really don't. If it was in a perfect world where that really meant, like, they had really cut spending, made a genuine effort, there was nothing left to be cut, they tried their best, I think taxpayers would say, let's bite the bullet. But that's not what they say. Absent the ardent, ideologically bound folks who just won't give up the idea of that higher taxes work, I don't think anyone really believes that anymore, that a tax increase is actually going to be spent on police, fire. That's just a talking point. It's just a talking head regurgitating a talking point, filtering down from your administration's pundits. There's no one actually believes that.
Well, let me ask you a kind of a Maryland-centric question on this, though. And it goes with the philosophy that most of what government spends its money on is actually people. In other words, if you're spending $3.8 trillion, well, they're employing a lot of people at that $3.8 trillion. And it just so happens that a good share of those government employees live in Maryland. So somebody can sit there and argue, well, if you cut government, well, it's going to hurt Maryland because so many Maryland people have paychecks that are government-based. So what do you, you can say, people say, well, we're cutting our nose to spite our face if we're cutting government, at least at the federal level.
Well, you're right. A large component of the government budget right now is salaries. But if we just halted the rate of growth, which would not affect... I've argued this point over and over. The people protesting in Greece right now, Well, really, whether they know it or not, protesting the spend and tax model, whether they know it or not, what they tell you is irrelevant. That's really what they're protesting, because that's what failed. Who's protesting? The government employees. It's not the public, the private sector, it's the public sector. They're the ones protesting because there's no money. So when there's no money, who's the first to get laid off and get fired? Public sector workers. How is it we are losing the, 290,000, 300,000 federal workers and their votes in Maryland as Republicans? We're the ones putting forth long-term spending models that ensure that their salaries, their benefits, their jobs are secure long-term. The Democrats are just giving them Band-Aids for a gushing wound. Oh, here's a little Band-Aid. Stick that on there. I'm gushing blood. I need stitches. No. Let's not talk about that now. I mean, that's what they're doing. It's absurd. No one, and I know the Republican Party, correct me if I'm wrong, no one I know is running on a public platform of a mass firing of federal workers tomorrow. No one. Matter of fact, I'm an Austrian school economist. By desire, my entire life, I read an enormous amount of Schumpeter. Even the most ardent Austrian school guy would have a hard time explaining to you now how a mass layoff of federal workers is an economic solution. Granted, it's not, long term right now, the current levels of spending, the trajectory, yes, we are going to go bankrupt. But we could, if we just maintained what we had and stopped the baseline budgeting process the way we have it now and stopped the rate of growth at current levels, we could balance our budget. It would take a while. It would take maybe, a decade or two if we were really, really committed to it. But that's not what anybody's even talking about. No one. And it's really sad. I mean, that whole line that, we're going to, the Republicans are going to fire all the workers, it's just nonsense. I mean, the federal workers should understand, I was one, that their very careers are in jeopardy with the current spending trajectory we have now. There's going to be no job left. None. And you're seeing it right now in even areas in California where liberal voting districts, San Jose, that said, we're not only cutting pensions for future workers now, we're cutting them for workers that are working right now. I think it was 16, they have to pay 16% more. I mean, that's a real problem, and how federal workers in Maryland don't see that that's just best for them, too, with their FERS, the federal employees retirement system. I wouldn't be surprised at all if in the next decade there's talk about nationalizing that money. Saying, well, we're just going to borrow from it. Then it's over at that point. Forget it. So, we're the ones offering tangible plans.
Well, that's good. I think I got enough of your time there, Dan.
You call, call any time. I don't know. I never mind talking to you. It was very good stuff, so.
Well, I know, but I know you want to get back to your crib.
Yeah, I got to put together my daughter's crib. I got an 11 o'clock interview, too, with the WQMR folks out in Ocean City.
Oh, nice.
This time of year, so it's a good time to get on the radio.
There you go.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, Dan. You have a good one.
You too. Bye.
Bye.